Our transmitter is located in the Field of Folly in Abismo, New Jersey. We operate on channel 2450600 horizontal and 5186 vertical with an operating power of pi r square megahertz. Mm. And have a good life.
Well, if pi r squared, then megahertz, but pi are round.
What happened in there? Are we on off the air?
Car charge.
Good afternoon, morning, or good evening, and welcome.
Anybody here remember radio?
Oh, honey, you turn me on. I'm a radio.
Off the air.
Good morning and welcome to NEWFM's radio magazine, FM. This morning, Richard Neer will have part two of his discussion with author Robert Ludlum. Dr. Gregory Payne will discuss Kent State, which has an anniversary coming up this Tuesday, May the 4th. Jim Monahan will talk with the rock group Squeeze, and The Source will look into the rocky road of rock and roll. I'm Earl Bailey. All coming up in the next hour on FM.
I think radio, in a lot of ways, contemporary radio, has gotten a little boring.
The kind of airplay that used to be given to a new act is not there anymore.
We've always said it used to be better in the old days. The stations used to break more acts in the old days. It was looser then. It's never been loose.
The fact is, there are any number of alternative methods to dispose of your entertainment dollar.
Video killed the radio star. Video killed the radio star. Video killed
the rocky road of rock and roll is riddled with potholes, dotted with detours, and no longer paved with gold. For years, the record industry grew and grew, building huge profits and huge corporations. The music rocked and the money rolled in. There were the experts who claimed the multi-billion dollar industry was recession-proof. Everybody seemed to love their music, and they'd pay any price just to rock and roll.
Well, you can't tell by the way I use my walk. I'm a woman's man. No time to talk. Music loud. Women want the thing. Kids around. Since I was born.
And stars began to shine. They loved the money, the limos, the parties, the fame. As the stars became more demanding, the record companies became more generous. Hey, it was megabucks time. Everyone could join in on the fun. But all of a sudden, the record companies lost control of their superstars. The talent demanded more money and complete artistic control. Profits began to drop, and the knee-jerk reaction of the record companies, damn the torpedoes, full price ahead. That backfired. When prices went up, revenue didn't go up because sales went down.
We're a little price conscious and we're a little afraid, frankly, to keep raising the prices because we don't want to get to the point where the people say we don't need you anymore. Much like they've done with several industries in this country.
The Detroit syndrome is what worries Warner Brothers Vice President Lou Dennis, and for good reason. The record buyers were running out of record-buying bucks and becoming very selective. At the same time, record company presidents, such as Joe Smith of Elektra Asylum, realized they had some very serious competition.
The fact is, there are any number of alternative methods to dispose of your entertainment dollar now, things that did not exist a few years ago. There were no arcades that sucked up quarters like a monster, as there are now with all those Pac-Man and Space Invader and Missile Control games. Video games to buy and cartridges to buy at home. There were no movie channels. There were no video cassettes to rent or buy. There were no video cassette machines to buy. There was very little pay television.
Belkin, president of the audiophile record company Mobile Fidelity, has spent 15 years in the biz. He's worked for and run four of the biggest record companies.
The industry in the mid and late 60s was growing at a dramatic rate, so there was lots of opportunity for lots of bright young people. As things started to level off, fewer young people were coming into the business. There weren't as many spaces. And what you have now is a fairly aging population of whiz kids in the 60s who are middle-aged in the 80s and not particularly as energized maybe or as connected with their roots as they were at the inception of the business.
Lose contact with the street and you're bound to lose your customers. Many radio stations have learned that lesson the hard way. Now they use all manner of research to get a feel for what the street wants to hear, what you want to hear. Kevin Matheny is the program director of one of the most listened to radio stations in America, WNBC in New York City.
I'm inclined to think that a lot of it is just boring music. We went through the disco phase, which was boring music. And even disco fans admit that it was boring music, and I never really was one. We went through a phase of a lot of ear bleed chainsaw rock and roll music that wasn't particularly good musically. It sure wasn't the Beatles. And now a lot of people are out thrashing around. It seems like at least there are some people trying. There are people making an effort.
But the record companies are not signing the effort makers these days. Just ask president of Electra Asylum Joe Smith and Larry Salters of Frontline Management.
We are now faced with a situation, well, you'll buy a retread from another company for $2 million because radio plays it so safe. Then we are forced to play it safe. And that really sucks the juices out of our business and makes it much more difficult for new artists and new talent to get any kind of shot whatsoever.
Gone are the days when they would just go out and just sign everybody and just have so many groups that there were not enough people to work it. But now there's really a return to the days when you don't sign an act unless you really believe in it.
Joe Smith.
Home taping has become an epidemic. We don't quite know how to deal with it. And there are now machines that are being sold in this country that can copy from tape to tape so that we find that somebody buys a record and makes two or three copies for friends rather than four people buying a record. We find that there's a small cottage industry going on at some schools and some stores and other places where people are making money. Bring your blank tape and we'll knock off a record for you for $2. No, naturally, the artist doesn't get paid, the songwriter doesn't get paid, the record company doesn't get paid. It's less money into the whole machinery, which gives us less opportunity to develop new talent, to market the current talent. And what we face, unless we can put a stop to it, is a much smaller record business down the line.
Oh, the artist loves the fact that you appreciate their talents. But producer Ted Templeman on the Source Report suggests you can't eat appreciation.
The main thing is for my artists, it's not fair to them. They work really hard, and then the money's taken right out of their pocket.
The industry is not taking this lying down. Witness the recent congressional hearings in Hollywood. Record company presidents such as Joe Smith have clout in Washington to push for a blank tape tax, even though there are those who would rather see technology rule with an iron hand.
If we could come up with a technological innovation that if you were going to duplicate our tapes at home, it would blow up your whole block, you know, there'd be a signal. Well, I guess we could do it, but it would be unfair to the person who bought a record and wants to make a copy of the tape for his car, or somebody who can't afford to buy another record every time it wears out. They bought a record and they just want to put one on tape so that when the record does wear out, they'll have another copy of it or play the tape.
The way we look at it is that there is an artistic depression in the United States.
Radio programming consultant John Sinton of Burkhardt Abrams, Michaels Douglas and Associates.
The $9 billion that got spent on Pac-Man and Asteroids and other video games and video arcades last year is money that could have easily have gotten up and walked into record stores if there was product in record stores that these people were interested in buying. However, there is not. And the industry can point at the video game industry as a scapegoat if they like, but I will refer you back to last year when they pointed at the soft economy as being their scapegoat. And my answer to that is a scapegoat year in and year out will not solve their business problems. Their business problems are primarily that because of the microcosm nature of the record industry, which is to say that it is based in New York City and Los Angeles exclusively, they never get a street feel for what goes on in the United States.
Sinton and other consultants such as John Sebastian and Jeff Pollock advise radio stations on how to get the most listeners, how to become number one, in other words, how to make big bucks. Most often, the consultant who works for radio stations all around the country advises the local program director on which records to play and how often, something that makes some ears burn red with anger, especially the record companies, the artists, their producers and managers like Ted Templeman and Larry Salters.
It used to be that a single would be the criteria for determining a successful artist, but now you can have an act become tremendously successful without a hit single. They can launch a whole career with just an album. And this is because of AOR play and because of, in other words, FM play is very important now.
I think radio, in a lot of ways, contemporary radio has gotten a little boring. I mean, it might be damn good music, but it's all the same because it's all formatted. Yeah, I think the listener becomes a little tired with listening to the same thing over and over and over again.
It's the tight playlist blues. Radio stations won't play new music. Veteran record promoter Tony Richland has dealt with some of the biggest radio stations and admits to the Source Report, tight lists are a pain. But
we've always said it used to be better in the old days. The stations used to break more acts in the old days. It was looser then. It's never been loose. We've been saying that for the 25 years I've been in the business. It used to be easier. The stations are only going with tried and true acts. They're going with proven entities. And yes, in a way, I guess they are. But that's just kind of an excuse. If it's really good, and if the label puts it out and it's really good, and the record gets out there, it's going to get heard.
Consultant John Sinton pleads guilty for rock and roll radio.
Our playlists are tight, that is true. They are tight because we can't find the product to play. Nothing would please us more than to have a situation like 1969 where you could afford to have 90% of your played records on the air be current records rather than oldies or even recurrent, something between 6 and 18 months of age. The problem right now is simply that they aren't producing the sort of stuff that we can put on the air with confidence and know that we will hold our listening audience. You have to remember that for us, the bottom line of the business is listeners.
Joe Smith.
You play a certain kind of record, and if it doesn't fit that format, no matter how popular it is, you don't play it. Whereas we could cover a major city with two radio stations at one time. We now need six or seven, and we find increasing preoccupation with the science of broadcasting rather than the entertainment and the adventurous spirit that radio always seemed to demonstrate. Call-outs, passive research. People are programming their music on the most scientific, again, gibberish that there is.
The radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is the sound of salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. So you better listen to the voice of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason.
If you draw a big pie-shaped graph and let it represent people that listen to music radio stations, then you draw an intersecting pie-shaped graph. It's going to be much smaller if you draw the graph of people who buy records. And it's also people buy records who do not listen to radio, some of them, and people buy records who don't listen to contemporary radio. And people, many, many, many more people listen to radio than buy records.
I want to bite the hand that feeds me. I want to bite that hand so badly. I want to make them wish they never seen me.
Your favorite radio station is there for you only because it makes enough money to keep the owners happy. That's done by keeping listeners happy, not necessarily keeping the record makers happy.
So we're looking for a way to better represent people that consume radio, not necessarily records.
Kevin Matheny is a number one programmer because he super serves his listeners. The only way to do that is to meet, talk to, and listen to the listeners anonymously. He has two methods, random telephone call-out and panel test research. For call-out, they interview folks on the phone, first asking warm-up questions to get the listener thinking radio.
Do you have a radio that has AM and FM? Do you have a radio in your car? Does your car radio have AM and FM? We'll just ask, what radio stations did you listen to last week? From the time you got up until the time you went to bed, all 7 days of the week, whether you selected them or not. Of those, which did you spend the most time with? It's amazing how predictable people's listening arrays are.
If everything clicks, then they ask the listener to participate in a music survey.
We'd like to call you back at a time that's convenient for you, spend 6 or 7 minutes on the telephone, and get your opinions of some songs. We'd like to know what you like, what you don't like. This information will in turn be handed over to some New York radio stations, and you may well be able to influence what you hear musically on the radio.
People don't normally put together titles in the way a record sounds, so Matheny will play excerpts.
They'll get from a couple of seconds to 7 or 8 or 9, maybe 10 seconds. Not so they can make an evaluation on that, but so they can remember whether they've heard it or not.
Another research technique used by Matheny and other programmers, panel tests.
One of the beauties of a panel test is that you pay people. You tell them, we'd like you to come down to the Paramus, New Jersey Holiday Inn and spend a couple of hours with us, and we'll take a break and have some soft drinks and Danish and stuff, and we'll pay you $20 if you get through the whole night. And then we'll test 300 songs in an evening.
There are also focus groups where radio consumers sit and talk about what they like or don't. The programmers watch from behind one-way mirrors. All of this is fed into computers, and from that, the programmers and music directors let their gut feelings take over.
We feel pretty good about our instincts. We're pretty well-educated programmers, and we're still wrong pretty often. You never know what people are going to like. That's why it's wonderful to be in this business, is it's just... it's crazy and unpredictable.
Radio stations won't play anything unless it's familiar. The problem for a new group, which wants to change the face of music, is to figure out which came first, the chicken or the egg. Jeff Gelb is the AOR editor for Radio and Records magazine, and he says it's up to the new groups to make themselves familiar to the listeners.
Well, it's going to probably go right back down to two places. Number one, clubs. And hopefully there's a club scene that people will still support. Certainly that's the case in some cities and not in others, depending on, once again, the economy of the times. The second place they can go to is their own creativity to come up with their own records. And probably there's never been a time when there have been more independent labels created by the artists themselves to get their records out there to the audience they know exists. And interestingly enough, if you have a following in your hometown, you can actually sell 5,000 copies of a record and make money on it. Quarter Flash is a good example of a band who sold a single locally and made money on it and attracted significant attention from the record company for doing that, and then were signed and have done real well ever since.
There are some small record companies which have caught on to that idea. They aren't bogged down in the bureaucracy. One of them is IRS Records. President Miles Copeland tells the Source Report,
people told me I was crazy with the police. People told me I was crazy with the Go-Go's. And almost every group I've ever touched, to me, that's a challenge, you know. But I think there's something there, and I'm willing to buck the system.
How did they buck the system? Well,
we were probably the only people in the business to look at what was going on and say, well, we are going to attempt to break new music without going through radio. because radio was not being very receptive of what we were doing. We looked upon it as a challenge, and we said, well, all right, radio isn't going to play this music. How else can we expose it?
They used video via the cable channels, plus brother Ian Copeland, who runs FBI, Frontier Booking International, took the groups, police included, put them on the road with U-Hauls, cheap hotel rooms, and booked them into small clubs, which opened up a whole new circuit and a new market for music, according to Ian Copeland.
We check it out in the marketplace. We find out where there is a certain amount of interest, and then we build from that interest, make it stronger by having the act play there in a small club and then come back in a bigger club and selling out as we go.
If you're going to a place that is a small town, Omaha, Nebraska, you don't go in and play a big theater there. You walk in and try to get some small club interested, and you talk some poor little club promoter into taking on a group for $200, right? Which isn't much of a risk for him, and he plays the group, and lo and behold, 100 people come, and he thinks, hey, this is not bad. And next time he books a group like this, then 200 people come, and 300, and eventually you move up. It's a long, slow process. But to me, the challenge is getting into places like Omaha.
It gets the groups heard. It worked for Miles and Ian Copeland's brother Stuart with his group, The Police, and it's working again for the Go-Go's, but it wasn't easy for the Go-Go's to get going.
I first saw the Go-Go's in London. It was very early on, and they weren't really that great. They weren't a great group then, but they had a lot of enthusiasm and energy, and I later came across them again in Los Angeles, where they were building up a strong local following. And the people in my office started getting interested in the group. I met the manager. The manager at the time thought she wanted to sign some big record company and go for huge money. She'd go into the record company and take the girls along, and they'd go in, and they'd find out, at, let's say, Elektra Records or whatever the label was, they'd go in and nobody had ever heard of them. And these were people living in their hometown. And the girls, thinking, wow, we're one of the hottest groups in L.A., walked into a record label and nobody had ever heard of them. They're thinking, wait a minute. You know, who's signing us here? Who's going to work on us? So we're going to be lost. We're going to sign to this company and be lost. Well, our company, they kept finding our guys at all the gigs. Then they said, well, wait a minute. This company, at least they dig us. They come into our gigs. They came in to the offices, and everybody fell all over themselves. My God, it's the Go-Go's are here. Well, they realized that that's something you can't buy with money.
Into the studio to make an album. One of the producers was Rob Freeman.
I don't know if I should say they're not the best players in the world, but they are really willing to work. And it's that drive combined with the ability of somebody like myself to show them what might work and what might sort of click for the time that made the record what it is.
The key to success for the Copelands has been low overhead. The first Police album cost them only $8,000, while some of the older mega groups have spent mega bucks. Fleetwood Mac spent more than $1 million to produce Tusk. Artist managers such as Larry Salters have found another good and inexpensive way to get the new music out and exposed.
What's becoming very big now among record company promotion staffs is colleges. College radio stations are really one of the last strongholds of new music, where you can get some new music played.
Rob Freeman believes to smooth the rocky road of rock and roll, you need new and different music.
It needs something fresh happening, which is what people get excited about. They're tired of hearing the same old thing over and over again. And as a producer myself, I get tired of making regular records in regular studios.
Rob Freeman has broken the mold. His latest album is with a Canadian group, Queen City Kids, recorded in an old abandoned bank in Winnipeg. It gave them the new and different sound they were looking for. Because of that, Herb Belkin, president of Mobile Fidelity, still has hope for his lifelong dream business of music making.
You have to realize that with all of the problems that are going on, the industry may not be a $4 billion industry as they describe themselves at this moment, okay? But they're still probably 3.2, 3.3. And you must remember that for an industry that, say, 24, 25 years ago was maybe doing $185 million, that's not shabby.
But as super programmers such as John Sinton and Kevin Matheny might tell you, the Rocky Road needs some new hot top.
We think that there might truly be an artistic depression out there. There may be kids who just are not evolving the music of the last revolution, which is to say, I guess I should clear that up, what that means is that the Beatles' evolution was a clear evolution from that of Elvis Presley and Buddy Holly. And Led Zeppelin and Jethro Tull and the music of the late 60s was a clear evolution of the last revolution, the Beatles. And so that's how it has to happen. We are waiting for the next new big band, and they will be the band that evolves Led Zeppelin to the next stage or evolves Pink Floyd to the next stage. And until everyone realizes that and starts to get with the program and move the music ahead instead of backwards or sideways, our hands will be tied and we will continue to play things that we know will guarantee a good audience.
Maybe we've just come to almost all of the possible creative permutations that there are. I hate to think that that's the case, but maybe it doesn't get better from here. Maybe it just gets more boring from here. I hope not.
Rocky Road of Rock and Roll was produced, written, and reported by Bob Madigan. Co-produced and directed by Lawrence Kassoff. Engineering, Sherry Freeman, Roseanne Inzerillo, Arnie Sider, Jerry Wendell, Betsy Torres, and Sally Hughes. I'm Bill Crowley.
WNEW-FM, New York.
Rock and Roll!
You're listening to FM.